Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
All right, Michael? I think we're live.
Hey.
My face looks very red. I don't know why.
Maybe you're embarrassed.
I think the color's just bad. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Well, what's going on, Michael? Long time no speak.
Yeah. It's been a while. We have not had a show since the May primary, and we just had the special August primary, which we'll be talking about today. And it's just been a busy summer. Time's flying by. And looking forward to getting this ramped up, trying to get some candidates on here before the big midterms this fall. So,
well, we've got a huge list of people that won on the show. Believe it or not, I think that MV Red is it's a hit, right? A lot of local politicos won on there. And I have to say, since we interviewed Nick Santucci, he's taken off. He's been doing a lot. He was up here in Chagrin. I wasn't able to make the fundraiser, but he was over here. And yeah, this is like the place to be. We got to get Gino DeFabio on. We've got a lot of young Republicans in Ohio to get on.
And I'm still working on it. I need to get back to Al Catrone at Logan Church. I need to get her some dates here, and we'll get Al on as well.
Frank LaRose, I met him. He was up here in Geauga. He sent me a handwritten note. He wants to get on the podcast as well, the Ohio Secretary of State.
I did see that. That's very exciting.
Lots of people. But how have you been, Michael? What have you been up to? Do you still have two kids? What's the latest there? What's going on?
I got two little ones, 3 and yeah. 5 now. They're growing up so quick. The little one starts kindergarten here in 2 weeks today. And so that's exciting, but a little bittersweet as well. I just remember when he was a newborn, and they don't lie when they say time flies and enjoy it when they're young. So,
yeah, that's true.
Been enjoying our summer and looking forward to him going to kindergarten and all the fun that'll bring.
Wow, that's sweet. You know what I like about you, Michael, is that you're like one of the few millennials that actually have children instead of like cats or dogs or like plants. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're kind of the exception and not the rule. You're a stable, married man, two kids, live in the suburbs. You're living the American dream, man. And you've got a Ralph Lauren polo shirt on, you know?
It's hard to see, but it does. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I certainly didn't buy it. It was definitely a gift to me because I'm not spending $80 on a polo shirt.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it's great to be Michael Metzinger, but, yeah, well, that's good. Well, listen, a lot of political stuff has been happening too. I mean, I know you got a list of things to go through, but man, it's been crazy. It's been super crazy.
It's been crazy, especially in recent days. And we'll be talking on this, the 37th episode. Can't believe we've made it that far. I think we've been going at this for like 3 or 4 years now, something like that. It may have been 2019, I think, is when this started. So we've been going on over 3.5 years, I think. And so we'll be talking about the FBI going into Mar-a-Lago and the whole thought process behind that.
Yeah.
And we'll also be talking about just kind of the political environment from this past summer, the economy, and definitely want to touch on my favorite governor, Ron DeSantis, coming back. I'm saying coming back to Youngstown because his family is from Youngstown, and so that's pretty cool. He'll be here next Friday for an event with J.D. Vance, which we'll also talk about. So where do you want to get started?
Well, are we streaming on Facebook? Because I like the Facebook comments. Are we doing that?
It's YouTube and Twitter tonight. I was having issues with Facebook. So the link has been shared on Facebook, but it's not actually streaming to Facebook.
Oh, anybody, I always like the Facebook trolls. Those are always really good. Well, you get some live trolling.
Last time we had a lot of trolls from Twitter. I forget who it was, but somebody didn't like who was it? Joe Blystone. I forget who it was, but somebody was going anyways.
Oh, well, first of all, DeWine won. I mean, I think we called that. Blystone lost, Renacci lost. I mean, there's really nothing.
I think we were, you know, fairly accurate with kind of how it ended up. I think we both said DeWine would end up between 45% and 50% of the vote.
Yeah.
If I go back on the spreadsheet, which is he ended up at, I think, about 48%. And obviously the anti-DeWine vote was split. Even, I think, I think maybe DeWine still would have eked it out even if it was one-on-one, because I have a hard time believing all of the anti-DeWine, vote would have necessarily gone to either Renacci or Blystone, because there's a lot of let's just say the Blystone folks didn't like the Renacci, Jim Renacci, and vice versa. So I'm not quite sure DeWine would have ended up losing that race, but it obviously would have been extremely tight.
Yeah, and I was just looking at the Senate, what we had before for the Senate. J.D. Vance got 32%, and I had him at 28%, you had him at 26%, and then you had Dolan and Mandel tied at 20%. I had Mandel at 23% and Dolan at 15%, and J.D. got 32%, Josh Mandel got 24%, and Matt Dolan got 23%, and then Gibbons, Timken, Mark Pukita got 2% of the vote. And Neil Patel, 1% of the vote. You know what I want to talk about, Michael? Forget the Senate primary. We'll get to the Senate election in a bit. We got to talk about Tim Ryan. We got to talk about a couple of things. But one is we've invited Chris Anderson, the chair of the Mahoning County Democratic Party. He's in his early 30s. He's our age. He was recently elected. We invited him on to do a one-on-one interview. And he insists that Tom McCabe be on as well, which I think is a little like there's just too many cooks in the room. I wanted to do a one-on-one with Chris Anderson. I want to get that in the works. I'm curious to see. I've got a lot of questions for him, but that's one item not to lose sight of. The next item is that they raided Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Like the FBI raided him. That's insane. It happened last night. Like first of all, do you know what Mar-a-Lago means, Michael?
Fun fact. I do not know what it means.
It means Sea to Lake. So there's a little lake and then the ocean, and Mar-a-Lago is right between the two. So Mar, Sea, Ocean, to Lago, Lake, Sea to Lake. That's what Mar-a-Lago means.
Interesting. I did not know that.
What's your take on the Trump raid? What are you thinking about that?
So the other night when it all came to be, I actually had the TV on for once and turned on one of the news channels. I'm not sure which one it was. And I saw it come up. And I'll be honest, I don't know if I thought anything of it. I'm actually not terribly surprised that this happened. And I'm not saying that from being critical of Trump. I'm just not surprised because there is this, the FBI and the government and the anti-Trump forces will do whatever it takes to stop Trump. And they obviously tried, twice to impeach him?
Yeah.
Right? They had the whole Mueller investigation and nothing kind of came of that. And again, the impeachment hearings. And then, now this, and it isn't a surprise to me because they constantly are going after him. And if your ultimate goal, in my eyes, is to stop Trump, I think you have to just ignore him. I think this bolsters Trump. And I'm somebody who's been on the record who says, I don't want Trump to run in 2024. But by doing this, I truly believe it's just emboldening Trump to do what I think inevitably is going to happen, which is him running again in 2024. And I think it really gets the base fired up in a way where, as if they didn't already have plenty of reasons to vote in this midterm, I think they're going to come out. But again, it doesn't I just was not surprised by it. And I watched the coverage, and I think we got to get into the why they did it.
Yeah.
But it was a extreme measure. And I think, and I'll give credit to former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was even somewhat critical, actually, of the FBI for doing this. And he said, this is, you know, essentially, I don't have the quote up, but it's an extreme measure, and they owe it to the public to explain why they did this. And so those were just kind of my initial thoughts. I wasn't surprised, but it's disturbing nonetheless.
Well, okay, so here's what gets me, right? Let me get on my little soapbox. One is, you could be Hunter Biden. And Hunter Biden, you know, one thing that really bothers me about Hunter Biden that nobody brings up, and this actually I think is revealing of Joe Biden's character, because I see these frequent statements like, oh yeah, Joe Biden's a total disaster. It's hard to argue otherwise. But he's a good person. And I actually don't believe he's a good person at all. I think if you want to make the case that Trump is a reprehensible person, I think Joe Biden falls in that category. But Hunter Biden fathered a child with a stripper in Arkansas, right? So that's Joe Biden's grandchild. And Joe Biden has never acknowledged that kid, never reached out to him, doesn't include him on the Christmas cards. Or it might be a girl. I don't even know. It's just totally ignored, right? That stripper was paid off, and it's just ran off. Like that's really sad to me, and I think it just reveals a horrible lack of character on Joe Biden's part, number one. But look at what Hunter Biden has done. Hunter Biden was running point for corrupt Ukrainian oligarchs, right? He was having sex with literally anything that moved, including, and I'm not exaggerating, Russian prostitutes. We know this, right? And what's really galling, and he had access to his father. There are statements like kick some money up to the big guy. He was clearly selling access to his father to Ukrainian oligarchs, corrupt, crooked interests for money, right? And this is clear. This stuff was leaked. And what did the media do? The media circled the wagons. They protected him. They said it was disinformation. It was Russian disinfo. And then 2 years later, after it didn't matter anymore, they're like, oh, yeah, that was real. But who cares? It's old news. This is what the media does. They'll first say, oh, that story is disinformation. It's a lie. And then they'll later tell the truth. But then they'll say, ah, but it's old news. Who cares? Right? They'll always admit the truth, you know, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. But you've got him. The FBI won't touch him. Hillary Clinton, Hillary didn't just delete emails. Let's be very clear what she did. She was running the State Department out of her own server in her house, okay, that was completely open and vulnerable to anybody. And then she deleted everything and purged it, okay, once they were investigating her. She got glad handled by the FBI. They never broke into her house. Eric Holder was illegally running guns through Mexico in Fast and Furious. Nobody busted in his house. The idea that they would, there was a New Jersey senator, I think Menendez, was having sex with underage prostitutes. Nobody ever burst into his house, right? So there's two laws, and that's what really bothers me, is that there are two laws in this country. There's an inside regime, and then there's the outer party. And the Republicans function as the outer party to put up token resistance, and the Democrats and the media and academia is the inner party, and the FBI are their handmaidens. And the FBI has turned into a quasi-secret police. I think they're more inept than the Cheka or the Gestapo, but they functionally essentially the same, right? And that's not to say there aren't good FBI agents. The other thing the FBI did was they set up that Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot where they set it up, they ran it, and then they arrested the people and said, look at us, we did a good job. There's all these mass school shootings that constantly happen. These kids are on the FBI's radar, but they totally drop the ball every single time. But when it comes to Donald Trump, who's an enemy of the state, he's an enemy of the regime, he is, for all of his warts, you know, somebody on the outside, the FBI raids his home. And I really want to see what the hell they were looking at. And you know, here's the thing. the other thing that gets me is that, like, they have thrown everything against this guy and none of it stuck. We want to talk about disinformation. Facebook, if you say, like, hey, cloth masks don't work and we shouldn't be vaccinating children, oh, disinformation, crackdown, you know, Twitter, you're kicked off. It's horrible, right? If you were to say, though, for 4 years that Donald Trump is an agent of Russia and there's a pee tape out there of him peeing on, like, prostitutes in Moscow, which was totally fake and fabricated, and he's not, you can get on MSNBC. Nobody's ever apologized for that, right? So it's the double standard, which is egregious. And the one thing that I appreciate is that conservatives or the right wing is waking up to the fact that these people hate you and they want you dead. And they hate Donald Trump because they once they take him down, they're not going to be satiated. Nowhere in history is it, well, we took down, you know, Donald Trump and now we're just going to go back to our villas and cubicles. And no, they're going to be emboldened, right? And they're going to keep pursuing you and keep coming after you. So that's my big thing. Like, Donald Trump, like him or not, he is a road bump, a speed bump on the consolidation of power, which we're seeing in D.C. And I think there's probably some bogus ass reason why they did this. And the right is rightfully uniting behind him. And I think he, you know, I was a DeSantis guy, kind of, sort of, flirting with DeSantis. But after this, it's like, I want to vote for Donald Trump 18 effing times just to stick it to all of them. So I'll stop there. I'm sorry, Michael.
I'm still a DeSantis guy. But
yeah,
a long way to go there. We'll see what even happens. I do anticipate Trump. What running nonetheless. I did put up on the screen Andrew Cuomo's tweet. DOJ must immediately explain the reason for its raid, and it must be more than a search for inconsequential archives, or it will be viewed as a political tactic and undermine all future credible investigations and legitimacy. Well, if you want to call it legitimacy, of the January 6th investigations. But he does have a point. You know, when I was watching the media coverage, the reports were, this has nothing to do with January 6th, and it has something to do with the archives. But really, you're going to go have a search warrant of Trump's residence at Mar-a-Lago over archives, over something that, according to media reports, they were already negotiating on. It just seems as though the authorities are using this as a means to try to find other things to try to pin on Trump. And I think that's a dangerous precedent to set. And again, it's disturbing nonetheless. And I think the FBI and Department of Justice owe it to the general public, because it's not like they just went and raided Joe Schmo's house.
Yeah,
they raided the former president of the United States, who is more likely than not going to run for president again in 2 years. So, you know, all this talk last time around, ooh, investigating the, you know, one of your political opponents, hello, they've weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI, and they are now using it against their political opponents, which is dangerous.
Jeffrey Epstein raped children, okay? He trafficked in underage women, minors, to be prostitutes to the rich and famous. Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide. We never knew. In Ghislaine Maxwell, that witch, okay, who, if we had a just society, there would be a bullet in her head after she was convicted, and her body would be hanging in the public square for crows to feast on, right? His list of clientels was never released. We know Prince Andrew. We know Bill Gates was on there. We know for certain Bill Clinton was on there. Donald Trump was associated initially with Jeffrey Epstein because he was a socialite. But by the way, you should look into this. He cooperated fully with the police once it came out that Jeffrey Epstein was raping women. Harvard University knew that Epstein was under investigation for child sex trafficking and pedophilia, and yet they still let him on their board of directors. They let him donate a ton of money, which just shows you what scumbags they are. And yet we, the public, have no idea who. So Ghislaine Maxwell was guilty of sex trafficking, but who was her client list? Who was she selling her services to? Right? We don't know that. We'll never know that. They'll never like bust through Bill Gates' doors, like never in a million years, right? If they do, I'll gladly be proven wrong, right? But Donald Trump probably took a piece of paper that was the incorrect piece of paper. They're going to bust down his doors. They didn't even give him the right of saying, hey, we need to investigate your premises. Get your lawyers and get on site and we're going to investigate, right? Like, you know, we have a warrant. We'd like to do it. They didn't do any of that. So I just think this is a real like mask off moment. And if you think you, Mr. Middle Class white guy, right? If you think that where all this is going is, well, the left is just going to get Donald Trump and it's all going to go to normal. I hate to say it. You're deeply mistaken. Like the country is rapidly destabilizing. If they will come after a former president, they will come after you. They just hired, you know, 87,000 new IRS agents, or they're planning to, or something ridiculous like that. Like, do you really think
that they don't need to be agents? They need to be customer service representatives. I was on the phone with four hours a couple of weeks ago. We need representatives who man the phones, not agents who are going to be auditing everybody.
Yeah, agreed. Like, but this is the thing. Like, they're not going to just stay. They're not going to go after the billionaires, right? They're going to come after you. They're going to come after me. Already Twitter censors everybody. It's just, it's very disturbing. And that is why I think that, like, you know, like him or not, I'm fully backing Donald Trump in this crusade. And, you know, if they get him on some technicality, screw them, screw the FBI, screw the Department of Justice. And yeah, I can't stand any of them. This government, let me ask you a question, Michael. Would you send your kids to join the military? This is a really hot question, but would you let your kids sign up to join the military and fight?
You know, if their heart was in it, I'm not going to stop them. But if they truly asked, I do fear, you know, with what we've done in the past with our military. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I don't know. I mean, if their heart was set on it, I can't say no, but I do have concerns with, you know, again, you know, who knows if could the military be next to be weaponized against people?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I would. Like, I'm a patriot. I love this. I love our country. I love what it was, but I don't like what America has become. And like, this is the country that gives mastectomies to 14-year-olds and pumps them full of puberty delaying hormones, right? Like, this is what America stands for now. Can you really say that the government is like representing the people? I don't know. I struggle with this. And I support people. I support the military. I'm not anti-troops or anything like that. I just, the country is not the country we grew up in. The past is no longer here. The world we grew up in is dead and gone. Is guess what I'm trying to say. And it's a scary reality to face, but anyway, so sad.
Yeah. So we'll see what comes of this. You know, again, you mentioned if they might try to get him with something small, something inconsequential, but honestly, what they've done is just awake. It's really not a sleeping giant because Trump's never gone away, but that's essentially what they've done. And like, yes. I said earlier in my comments, I think the best way to get rid of Trump is just to ignore him. I think he really thrives off of the attention, the media focus, because his supporters and those people skeptical of the media are going to take his side and rally behind him and come out to the polls and donate money and support candidates that he has endorsed. And it just backfires. And I just... That whole idea, what do they call it? Trump derangement syndrome. I think,
yeah.
I mean, it truly is. It's something. There's something to that. It's not necessarily a syndrome, but there's this obsession with these folks that they wake up and their goal, even though this guy is no longer president, is to try to get him on something. I mean, remember, it was the taxes, then it was Russia, then it was this, then it was that. They have failed every opportunity.
Yes, and shockingly,
and they just can't. And this is what they're going to try to pin them on, something with the archives, really?
Yeah, it's why was he like, okay, here's a question for you. Why was he impeached the first time?
What was the first one about? I'm trying to remember now.
Right.
There's so many.
Right. You're an intelligent guy. You're on top of politics. You host a political podcast. Why was he impeached? What did he do?
So that one would have been – you stumped me.
right? You know, it was a couple years ago. You don't even remember. Why was Bill Clinton impeached?
Oh, Monica Lewinsky in line.
Right. Okay.
Why? Yeah, it's something because it's something that there's credibility to it. It wasn't necessarily a weaponized political impeachment. Although, again, he wasn't removed from office, Clinton. But
no,
he wasn't. And somebody commented on the chat, the Ukraine phone call.
It was the Ukraine phone call, remember? It was, yes. It was, he
said. You want to know why that's a blur? Because now there's a war in Ukraine.
Ukraine, right? Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, what did he do wrong? He just said, hey, check. I read that transcript. I didn't think it was damning in the least, not to defend him, but he was just like, hey, you know, you got some corruption. Look into what's going on, right? And I don't know. I think as a quid pro quo, like, I think it's fully within the president's purview to say, before we give money to you guys, clean up your corruption, right? Because there's a lot of weird corruption, and we don't have to get into this, between the Bidens and Ukraine. Why was that impeachable? I never understood that. You know, Michael, what's your take on this whole Ukraine? Do you have the Ukrainian flag? Like, that's another thing.
I do not. But if you notice, the Restream logo in the top right corner is yellow and blue.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing, that whole, you know, I followed it early on. My biggest concern, and first off, I think there's a whole, you could dedicate a whole show on this idea of when it happened. I fully expected Russia to just throttle through and take control of Ukraine, which hasn't necessarily happened. But the concern I have is how much money our country continues to pump into Ukraine. And just both sides. And it's not like it's necessarily just Biden and the Democrats doing. There's plenty of Republicans on board with just sending all this money overseas. And you know, early on, I could see, but there's just no end in sight, and they're just going to continue. Ukraine's going to continue to come for us for money, and we're just going to continue. It's like an open-ended check. Here you go.
Well, what's victory?
Add a few more zeros.
What are we aiming for? What's victory? What are we trying to do there? Do you even know? We've given them $50 billion. What are we trying to do? Like, what is victory? Is it to go back to their pre-2014 borders? Is it to just defeat the Russian invasion? Is it to get what are we doing? Ukraine's not even a NATO ally. Like, the amount of propaganda on Ukraine, and again, I don't want to take this on a tangent, but was incredible. You had middle-aged white women, right, 45 years old with cats, talking about Ukraine like it was the most important thing on the planet. You know, as soon as COVID ramped down, Ukraine immediately ramped up. And they were acting like Putin, you know, had his blitzkrieg planned, and he was going to be pushing into the Ardennes unless we stopped them at Kiev, right? Which was just completely ridiculous. Anybody that has spent 15 minutes studying Ukrainian history knows it's far more complicated than people give it credit for, right? And most people can't even point out, could you, if I put a gun to your head, Michael Metzinger, could you, and you're a very smart person, could you point out Ukraine on a map?
I love geography, Dane, so I probably could.
But you probably could, but most people couldn't, right? Could you point out Crimea on a map and like Kiev?
No, I could.
No, right? But like you were, like you had, in Chagrin Falls, Michael, I would go there, and at the hardware store, there was a little Ukrainian flag. Like, how is Ukraine inimical to the interests of the Chagrin Falls hardware store? It was just propaganda. You know, that's the thing that gets me about the left, is they're like, oh, we're just enlightened centrists. You know, we're really big brain. We're above it all. We're just rational, reasonable people. Yet they were just victim to the largest psyop in 6 months, the Ukrainian stuff. So anyways, I'll stop there. It's just madness.
One thing, when it comes to events like this, and I look back at the U.S., and its place in the world, especially under Trump, there was certain animosity, hatred, towards pessimism towards the United States. But when shit hits the fan around the world, who do people turn to? Who do these other countries turn to? They come to us. They always got to come to us. And we just, at some point in time, we need to look, take a step back and realize we've got plenty of problems here. And what are we, especially in like Ukraine, what are we to gain continually pumping money there when we have plenty of issues going on in our own backyard. And again, plenty of people around the world, countries do not like us and do not like what we stand for. But again, when shit hits the fan, they'll come to us because they know we can't help ourselves. We constantly got to be in everybody's business around the world. And at some point in time, somebody has got to stop it. You got to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of the foreign policy aspect, there is still a financial aspect that we are subsidizing all this activity around the world. The American taxpayer, again, like you said, great point. What are we gaining from that?
If you find out, please let me know, because I don't know.
We have Gabriel in the chat saying, good evening. Nice to see another podcast, Gabriel. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, one more thing about Ukraine is it's unfortunate that the Republican Party, who still hasn't shed their neocon instincts, fell so deeply into it. The same people that were waving the Ukrainian flag, if the United States were to send over soldiers, those soldiers would largely, north of 75%, be white men. They would largely be from the heartland. They would be from middle class families or working class families or poor families. They would be sent over there. They would fight. They would die. They would come home in body bags. They would come home disfigured. And the same people waving the Ukrainian flag, wanting them to go over there, would then therefore tell them and their family members that they have white privilege and they benefit from virtue of having the audacity to be born white in the United States, and that the United States is a racist, horrible country. Those same people. That's what gets me. That's what gets me. And there is a social covenant that those who serve expect and demand and should have the respect of their peers. But the peers should never call them to serve and to put down their life, only in the most serious conditions when the republic is at stake, not so that they can feel good on their Instagram profile or on their Facebook profile by putting some foreign country's flag on there. It gets me so mad, you know, like, these same people that wouldn't be caught dead waving an American flag because that's just too gosh, right? It's too down market, will gladly wave the Ukrainian flag. So anyway, sorry, Michael, I'm going on.
Yes. So any final thoughts on well, let's go back. Any final
about?
Thoughts
yeah.
on the whole Trump and FBI?
No, I think I hope Trump takes down all of them. I hope he gets elected. And I hope he takes down all of them. And that's basically it. That's my take. I hope they all go down.
Fair. So what do you want to cover next? No, I but before we get into to Governor DeSantis coming to Youngstown, I did want to kind of recap the last few months because you've been a frequent guest on the Ron Verb Show. And I want to say it was probably, I don't know, let's say 5-6 months ago, you predicted that the U.S. would be in a recession at some point in 2022. And although the media and the administration has quickly redefined what a recession is because, you know, they can when a Democrat's president.
Yeah.
We had our second straight quarter of negative GDP. And as a result, we, by definition, although again, there's pushback to this idea that we are in a recession and you called it. And so from your economic viewpoint, your economist, your background from your days in college, what triggered the recession? Is it inflation? You know, what do you believe caused this, and how severe will this be?
Here's how I think it happened. 2019, we had a strong economy. In 2020, we locked down because of COVID. I think it was absolutely the wrong decision. It's easy to make that call with hindsight, but it was the wrong decision. When we did, the average consumer, I'm talking about the average, probably lost their job, right? Or saw their income fall off and was in a really shaky spot in 2020. In the end of in the middle of 2020 and in 2021, we gave them checks. We just started sending money to people, okay? So if you imagine, right, the average consumer, they lose their job, they get a bunch of cash. What they did was they either A, put it in the stock market and invested in wildly crazy stocks like GameStop. They paid down debt, paid down mortgage debt, credit card debt, car loans. We saw that. Or they saved it and just socked it away in cash, right? In 2021, at the beginning of the year, the economy was starting to come back. We were reopening. This was a 2020 was a recession unlike any other we self-imposed. And the average consumer came into 2021 with a high level of cash to spend, for lack of a better word. Their balance sheet was in good condition. They all spent it at once. The government added further fuel to the fire by passing the American Rescue Plan, the infrastructure bill, now the Inflation Reduction Act, which will not reduce inflation. At the same time, they're putting tons of spending in. The Federal Reserve had interest rates at 0%, and they were curbing the supply of energy exploration, not directly, but indirectly. So all this capital was chasing fewer and fewer goods, right? And that would create inflation. That created inflation. Since the American Recovery Act was passed, or the American Rescue Plan, whatever it was, every single month since then, real wages have fallen. So that's, you take inflation, you take the pay increase, and you look at that difference. If prices go up 10%, but your wages go up 5%, you have lost 5%. Your real wages have fallen. That has been happening for the last 2 years. We are now poorer thanks to the decisions of the government, okay? This is not the economy. This is government decisions made. We add on top of that, energy was starting to pick up in 2021, and inflation started to pick up in 2021 with the oil price. And then with Ukraine, it further accelerated it. But what's crucial to note is inflation was picking up prior to the Ukrainian war. So inflation starts to pick up in the beginning of 2021. When inflation rises, people pull back on spending because even though they have more dollars, those dollars buy less, fewer goods, and they curb spending, right? Or what they did was after they ran down their cash, they put on revolver debt, that's credit card debt, right? And they said, okay, we're gonna start to take on debt. And we've seen debt massively increase this summer and spring. So in the first half of this year, people started to pull back a little bit. And that's why we saw the negative GDP print. What's happening now is in June, inflation was out of control and the oil price was taking off. The federal government decided as a way to get ahead of the midterms to release oil, which is the key driver for inflation, one of the key drivers. They released oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. America is a big swimming pool of oil, right? It's not producing oil. It's just a vat of oil. They released that into the open market. And when they did that, and they're doing it now as we speak, and they're going to do it until November 1st. Coincidentally, what else happens in November? Oh, yeah, the midterms. And as soon as they released that oil, the oil price started to go down. And inflation, the latest headline inflation result shows that it's cooling off. Why? Because the energy price fell. So that is going to happen. So they're able to bring down inflation prior to the midterms. But here's the crucial part. They can't do that forever because they're not producing more oil. They're just releasing the stockpiles. So oil is going to go down. It's going to probably stay down. But then eventually, maybe not this month, you know, sometime soon, it might be today, tomorrow, it might be September, it might not be until November or December, the market's going to realize, hey, wait, once they're done draining this reserve, oil is going to go back up, inflation is going to go back up. And at this point, the consumer won't have the credit card debt that they can rely on because they're going to be maxed out and they're going to curb spending. We already saw Disney subscribers are falling. Netflix subscribers are falling because the middle-class families like yours, like mine, are pulling back spending where they can, right? It's not an emergency yet, but it's about to be. And when that spending pulls back, the entire economy is going to pull back. I think that's coming. I think it's going to come out the third or fourth quarter of this year. So that's my take on the economy. I'm sorry that was a bit of a spiel, but...
You're very good. You're very good with that. And anybody that listens to 570 WKBN in Youngstown, the Ron Verb Show, Ron loves Dane. Dane is on there quite frequently.
Oh, thanks. And I know you're too nice, Michael. Thank you.
The guests love you as well. The callers afterwards, they always say plenty of great things about you. You know your stuff on the economy and you called this. So credit to you.
Well, I think it's going to get worse. Listen, if anybody's listening to this podcast, beyond Michael and Dane and Shanley and Michael's mom, the gas price decline you see is temporary. Okay. We are not out of the woods. I know the Democrats are popping this champagne. It's all fake. I'm telling you right now, oil will go back above $100 a barrel. Write this down, okay? It's probably going to happen before this year's out. Write it down. And if I'm wrong, 6 months from now, I'll be like, Dane, you're an idiot. But it's going to happen. Your gas prices are going up to $4.50 again, if not higher, probably $5 again. So just get ready. And then as soon as that happens, the economy is going to collapse and it's going to roll over and then it's going to be nasty.
So when you were talking, you mentioned COVID was kind of this set the tone to put us in. Well, again, there was the recession related to COVID.
Yeah.
But the policies and the laws and things to the stimulus essentially that was put into place to, as a result of the self-imposed recession, have kind of triggered this recession.
Yeah.
And to kind of go back to the whole thing with COVID real quick, you know, again, early on, we know China in some way was behind this, and obviously they weren't very forthcoming with the information about COVID. The other thing that was, I think, really maybe led our nation to act the way it did was the early media coverage of China. We kind of bought in to the state-run media's portrayal of lockdowns in China, and it made our nation believe that COVID was far more severe than it actually was. And as a result, we jumped the gun. We bought into the state-run media of China, and as a result, we locked down. And again, Trump pushed lockdowns as well. I mean, he listened to Fauci, and I'm sure if he, again, you mentioned hindsight 2020, if he had to do it over again, he obviously would have done it differently. I think he probably didn't necessarily want to do that, but there's a lot of uncertainty, and I think at that point he kind of wanted to trust the quote-unquote experts, and it cost us tremendously. Now fast forward to this recession that we're in, and you talked about the inflation as a result of the stimulus, and people had all this extra money going around, and all of that entering the, you know, the business world and the marketplace. As you were talking, one of the things I look at is these price increases, and I think it's kind of a two-pronged issue right now for businesses. Not only are they facing inflation from the aspect, let's say if you're a restaurant, food costs, okay? There's issues with food costs, there's issues with supplies, things like that. So there's issues with the supplies, there's issues with the cost. But then another thing we haven't talked about, the labor force participation rate. And this is what the Democrats in the administration are using right now to try to change this definition of recession. Because if you look at unemployment, it's at, you know, extremely low levels, unemployment percentage. But when the labor force participation rate, I don't know the exact numbers. I'm going to say, let's say it's down 2% compared to pre-COVID levels. That's, you know, I don't know how many million people that would be. Maybe let's say 5 million people who have just stopped working. Okay. As a result, then what's happening? You see it everywhere, especially I would say on at places like fast food restaurants, things like that, retail establishments, businesses unable to find workers. And what does that do? What have they been forced to do? They've been forced to increase their prices. So now, like a restaurant, not only are you been getting hit with increases from food costs and things like that, now you're forced to pay your employees more because you can't go out there and get, you know, those high school, college employees, or perhaps somebody who just doesn't have some sort of trade school education or a college education to come work. And as a result, now, you know, I was at Wendy's today. My 4 for $4 is now $5. That's okay. I could live with $5 for that. But that my I used to call it the fo-fo-fo. That's what my son calls it, the fo-fo-fo.
That's cute. Wendy's. That's
but really cute. Like I saw like the spicy chicken meal on the app. It says $9.99 for a meal. Like a few years ago, that was like maybe $7.50 or something like that. You see it across the board. I was at Cassis's MVR in Youngstown. Again, it's still relatively cheaper than most restaurants in town. I noticed their prices increase. So certain businesses are seeing it from both ends. And that's a concern to me as well. And then let's see here. Oh, And who does inflation really impact the most? Think of gas prices right now. Think of that person who lives paycheck to paycheck. And and also, you know, they're hit with, okay, gas prices are up. They go to the grocery store. In the past, they were barely making ends meet. Well, guess what? Now they're really struggling to make ends meet. It's essentially like a tax increase. And remember, you had mentioned people are cutting back spending. The middle class still dictates the direction.
No, they do.
Large part of our economy. And so when you know, although the elites in D.C. may not realize that, you know, they might look at these unemployment numbers and these job growth numbers. Well, okay, I'm not diminishing those things, but we have too many people on the sidelines right now who for some reason or another are not working. And that is really – until that gets resolved, this inflation thing's not going away.
Well, yeah, no, the inflation thing will go away one of two ways. There will be a severe recession or there will be a severe recession. That's the only way it's going to go away.
Yeah, I know. I don't disagree with you there.
And it's coming. It is absolutely coming. I remain convinced. I feel like a little bit like the chicken who is claiming the sky is falling. But no, it is absolutely coming. And don't believe this BS about a soft landing. As soon as that Strategic Petroleum Reserve runs out and it's close to running out in November 1st, the whole market is going to change. And do you really think it's coincidental that they're going to release it all the way up to November 1st? It's right before the midterms, right? The Democrats will do anything so that they can keep these midterms, so they can keep with their agenda. I just want to say really funny, though, the Wendy's thing, I don't know if you find, Michael, that restaurants kind of suck nowadays. And I don't mean this as any shame on any restaurant owners, but the food quality, the service has certainly dropped out. Like, the service is horrible now. But the food quality, maybe it's just my age, it all kind of tastes plasticky and the same and chemically, and it just doesn't taste good. I know this is very vague and not specific, but like, I haven't had a really good restaurant meal where I'm like, wow, that was fantastic. Maybe that's me. Maybe I don't go to good restaurants anymore, but it all is just kind of bland and like bad quality, and the price has gone up. What's your take on that?
I think absolutely on the service aspect. And I'm one that I do like to dabble in fast food. It is horrific at times.
Yeah.
Outside of Chick-fil-A, some of the places I go with the service, like I went to Wendy's today. I walked inside. The line was probably 8 or 9 deep. So I ordered on my phone. But the poor kid behind the counter, I felt bad for him. He had nobody else to help him. He at one point had to tell the person, listen, I gotta service these orders. I got to put these orders together, and then I'll come and take your order. Poor guy's – he's doing like 3 jobs in one. He's trying to make ends meet. I've been there in different places in the past where they screw things up, and it's like, do I even want to go up to the counter and get it fixed? That has been definitely something. And at some point, you know, I'll mention it to my wife if you're having bad service at a restaurant. I was like, you know what? It's not even worth saying it. I mean, you can't say something. It's like, these poor restaurants are struggling, and it's like, it's the best they could get.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame the restaurants, and this is not a slight against the restaurants, but it's bad. And look, here's the thing. The consumer is going to give ground. You have 2 kids. I have 3 kids. It is really expensive to fill up that shopping cart with food. It is just very, very pricey. And eventually there comes a point where people stop going on the family vacation to Disney, or they don't buy that pair of skis, or they switch from Bordeaux to, you know, some low tier wine. I don't even know the brands, Barefoot wine. And so that eventually is going to happen. And when that happens, the economy is just going to be butt fucked. Pardon my language. The economy is going to be in a bad place. And what's funny, though, is the Democrats are timing it just right, that the GOP is going to get elected in November. They're going to take office in January, and the floor is going to be falling out of the market. They are just delaying it long enough to try to avoid that bullet. But I think they know that the GOPs, they're going to be the ones that take that right in the face. And Biden's going to say, our economy was great until the GOP got into office, and now we're in a severe recession. It's coming. I want you to get ready for this, because it is coming. It's BS, but it's coming. Get ready. And we'll, I'm a banker. My job's not safe. Well, it's kind of safe, but you're an accountant. Your job is the most safe, right? You should be fine.
Right. I'd like to tell, if there's any high school students out there who are going to listen to the recording of this,
yeah,
get into accounting.
Yeah. Like you're going to go.
It's the language of business.
Yes. It's the language of business. That's cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So great discussion on the economy. I wanted to get your insight because you're really good on Ron Verben.
Oh, thank you.
Good discussion on some things. Let's see here. Gabriel, serious question. He asks, while I don't doubt that the GOP will win both chambers in November, what tangible steps can they take to save the economy without having control of the White House?
I don't think that there's really any. I think that the best thing – so the short term, the damage is coming. I think over the long term, there are some solutions. I think spending needs to be curbed. I think taxes are probably going to have to keep going up to kind of close that gap. But the reality is, like, you can't do lockdowns again, right? That can't happen. They're just going to have to get discipline on the fiscal spending side. If they can pull that back, they can kind of cool off inflation a little bit. And I don't know. I think you can. One thing that would help would be to truly open up American domestic energy exploration and stop with these wacky mandates. Like I know they say, like, oh no, we're still letting them drill. But if you look at the wells, they've never recovered to the pre-2020 levels because there's a lot of indirect ways of preventing people from drilling, even if you give them, say, the permit. There's lawsuits and stuff like that, and there are royalty fees that they've squeezed them. So just stopping the war on energy. One thing I think is really, really important are the tariffs on China and the rest of the world. Trump looks really smart in retrospect by doing that. I think we need to keep those. I think we need to keep putting up tariffs on manufactured goods so that people build domestically. I think the irony is I think the U.S. is in a really good position relative to the rest of the world. But I think we're going to go through a lot of pain before good times come. Like, I think we're going to have a very severe downturn. But I think thereafter, I think, like, if we can get our political system straightened out, big if, the economy should be fine. Because the U.S. is still the best place to invest and do business. It's still like Americans are great people. Like, we work very hard. We're not stupid like the Europeans and lazy. You know, this is what makes me mad about the Europeans. They're so arrogant and cocky, yet they won't fight. They won't spend a dime or a euro to build their own military. They'll have Americans spend billions of dollars for Ukraine, but they're not going to go do it. You know, the Germans, are the Germans even our ally? I remember the Second World War. Does anybody else? They weren't our ally then. What about World War I? No, not them neither. I think they're kind of playing both sides. Gosh. Anyways, I'll stop there. I wouldn't want to be the Europeans, though. They're feckless, weak. They're a cowardly lot, those Europeans. Just feeble.
So the last thing I wanted to discuss was my favorite governor. Governor Ron DeSantis from Florida is coming to Youngstown next Friday at an event. I think that's going to be changing from its an originally announced location, but he's going to be here to campaign for J.D. Vance in the U.S. Senate race. So I'm excited about that. Obviously, we mentioned on this program now the media is kind of catching on to the fact that Governor DeSantis, his aunt and uncle still live here in the Mahoning Valley. His mother is from Youngstown. His father's from, I think, Western PA, Beaver Falls area. They met at Youngstown State. And the one thing I didn't know, I found out yesterday when I was reading one of the articles, his grandfather used to be the Mahoning County Republican chairman, I guess, in the 60s and early 70s. So he definitely has some roots here in the Mahoning Valley, which is pretty cool. And again, his uncle is a well-known Catholic priest, and his aunt is a Catholic nun here in the Mahoning Valley. And I know both of them. Obviously, I know the Catholic sister, fairly well. And so it's exciting to see him come to town, and especially, you know, he could have gone anywhere in Ohio, and he coming to Youngstown, I think, is important. And then, I believe next week as well, or the following week, Don Jr. is going to be in the Mahoning Valley as well.
Beast.
To support Mike Loycheck. So two major players in the Republican Party are coming to Youngstown. And again, think back 10 years ago, this never would have happened. But with this constant, you know, MV red, the Mahoning Valley turning red and continuing to turn red, the Republicans see opportunities to lay the groundwork so it stays red for years to come, which is exciting.
Michael, a couple questions. Are you going to go to any of those rallies? I might go to the
I'm hoping to go to the DeSantis one. I'd like to, if possible.
I'll see you there. We'll give out signed autographs.
We should get some empty red shirts made. And
yeah, totally. Did you know? So this is totally off topic, but it's on topic. Just go with me on this. I was listening to the Crooked City podcast about Youngstown. Yes. You listen to that.
I'm quite jealous of the production of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's really good. But the Don Hanna, I never realized this. Don Hanna was the Mahoning County Democratic leader, chair.
The Bull Moose is what they called him, I thought.
Yeah, he was the chair of the Democratic Party. And yet at the same time, he was the lawyer for the mob. He was defending the mob. So I just want you guys to think about this. While the mob was killing innocent people, and not only killing them, but selling them prostitutes and drugs and gambling and all sorts of vice. So while they were like a parasite preying on the Mahoning Valley, hardworking people, like a parasite, the Democratic Party in Mahoning County didn't take the side of the working man. They took the side of the corrupt mobsters and defended them. So I think Don Hanna, he should ask God for forgiveness. I know he's dead, but I hope he asks God for forgiveness, number one. And two, I think, frankly, the Mahoning County Democratic Party owes reparations to the people of Youngstown for taking the side of the mob. Like, this is indefensible. He should be banned. They still have, like, a Hanna golf outing, don't they?
It's still a well-known name.
Yeah, like, he should be. Why are we tearing down statues of George Washington? Okay, and Thomas Jefferson. And yet Don Hanna, his statue needs torn down. I'm sure somewhere there's a statue. It's probably in like some Italian restaurant. It needs torn down. And I want to ask Chris Anderson, where are you paying? Well, I don't live in Mahoning County, and I never did. But where are you going to pay the people of Mahoning County reparations for defending the mobsters that, like a parasite on the ass of civilized society, were preying upon them? I want to know, like, where's my reparations? If I, by virtue of the fact that I'm white, have to pay reparations because some white guy that I'm not related to 200 years ago had slaves, Don Hanna and his kids should be paying that. Did I lose you, Michael?
I was still thinking, I'm like, is there really a statue of Don Hanna? I will say this. First off, that podcast you referenced, Crooked City. If you haven't heard of this, it's a new podcast on the mob and the corruption of the Mahoning Valley. I think it's outstanding. I'm only on episode 4. My brother, I think, ended up purchasing the thing to get all of the ones in advance.
Oh, that's based.
Yeah. And I'm definitely enjoying it. But a whole aspect, I think we have a tremendous show on this, is Jim Traffic. If you hear that guy talk and how his mindset and his ideas, he just reminds me so much of Trump.
He was Trump before Trump.
But it is remarkable hearing him. For people around the Mahoning Valley, Northeast Ohio, Western PA, they know who Jim Traffickin is. And so when you see Donald Trump, again, this area supported Traffickin, and that's probably in many ways, it liked that populist message, the way he talked. It resonated locally in this area. And so we were used to that. But a lot of people outside of the Mahoning Valley in Ohio and PA may not know Traffickin. And I encourage you to listen to this podcast, because you listen to it and you hear these clips of Traffickin. It every time he talks and the way he talks and the way he champions the working class, it just to me sounds so much like Donald Trump. It's to me remarkable. And we've talked about the Traffickin Trump, kind of that connection there with voters locally. But if you listen to this, and again, we're I think in episode 4 right now. It's the FBI. How about that? The FBI going after after trafficking, obviously there's probably a lot more to it than them going after Trump now, but it is a great podcast. I certainly encourage people to check out on, even if you're not from Youngstown, just to hear all of these stories. It's very well done.
I can't wait to the, check it out. It's a great podcast. I can't wait for the Campfield Fair so I can go to the Democratic booth, right? And I can say, hey, where are my reparations for your chair of your party defending the mob, defending organized crime? Where? That mob was parasitic to the city of Youngstown in the Mahoning Valley. They preyed on people. They took their money. Don Hannah made his money defending these crooks. Okay. And then he was a chair of the Democratic Party. Why aren't you tearing down his statue? Find his statue and tear it down. That's my argument. There you go. That's my take.
I would just want to know if Chris Anderson would be supporting Jim Trafficant the way he talks. Because in many ways he's I know that, but you know, back then, you know, he's the champion of the working class. He's one of us. He's a Democrat. But if you listen to him, he would not fit in today's modern day Democrat Party whatsoever.
No, zero chance. There's zero chance that Chris Anderson would defend a Jim Trafficant. Okay, he would be like, he is racist, sexist, xenophobic, bigoted, transphobic, and I don't defend him, right? He would call him every slur in the book. Because you notice the Dems don't really have arguments anymore. They just call you names. They don't have a way to make your life better. Like they did in the past. They had policies. They don't do that anymore. Your wages have fallen every single month since Joe Biden's been in office in real terms.
Your policy is spending your money.
It's your money making
stuff
you poor.
They want.
Yeah, the Democratic policy is sending your son to Ukraine and then giving his job when he comes back to some H-1B visa from India. And if you dare complain, you're racist, right? And then, oh, by the way, that veteran's kids, they have white privilege and they're in the back of the line for college admissions and jobs because, you know, we have affirmative action. That's the Dems. That's their policy, 100%. Sorry, that's it. I'm done, Michael. I'm so mad. We got to get Chris Anderson on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I have my notes here. Definitely want to get Chris Anderson on. I need to follow up with Logan Church to get Al Catrona on. And I've seen Gino, and I know we need to get him on for his big show. He's got a tough race. It's going to be a tight race. It's going to really put to test Carol Remedio Righetti, who's well known locally.
Gino
I kind of view it as kind of yes against Gino. So it's going to be an interesting race. She's again well known, well connected, but Gino again is well known, and it's going to kind of really pit the different geographic areas of the county, and we'll see what happens. It's going to be a fascinating race that I definitely want to have Gino on to kind of discuss strategy, but that's going to really give us an idea of where, you know, statewide level, congressional level, and at the presidential level, we've seen movement towards the Republicans. Now, to pick off a county commissioner seat, which hasn't been Republican in probably, I'm guessing, 4 or 5 decades, would be the next big step for Republicans in the Mahoning Valley.
Carol Righetti is a huge buddy with the Youngstown City Councilman. The young guy, and he was running for chair.
Mike Ray
was one of the ones who took your money, your water money, and gave it to well-connected individuals with Youngstown on private development that went absolutely nowhere. So Mike Ray is a horrible steward of public funds, should be absolutely ashamed of himself. The poor people who are working to pay their water bill, that money is not being reinvested in the water services. It's been used as a slush fund for private sector development in Youngstown. That's Mike Ray. And he is the protege for Carol Righetti. So Remedio Righetti, she's
a Dane as a, you'd be a good party chairman. I could see you versus Dave Beatrice on like
I actually like Dave Beatrice. I promise I like him a lot. I think he's a good guy.
I do enjoy. I think he's softened up a bit. I think ever since he backed off as chairman of the Mahoning County Democrat Party. But I think he's one who I've invited on in the past, and he said he'd come on. I would thoroughly enjoy a Dane Beatrice podcast to duke it out.
Yeah, because I have nothing but contempt for the Mahoning County Democratic Party, because it's not even about the policies. Put those aside. They are corrupt, they are ineffective, and they are inefficient, and they've run this area to the ground. And you know, I want to say one more thing and then we'll break. Nick Santucci is a great guy. But one of the things that I really impressed me was, one, he's a genuine, honest man. I hope he's listening. But two, he said, I really wanted to take pride in the area and I wanted to clean it up. So I had a couple events where we were just going and cleaning up trash, right? Because this is our home. This is our area. And we wanted to clean it up, and everybody could feel involved. And to me, that is a great sign, because it shows he cares about the area and he wants his area to do well. Whereas if you look at the Democratic politicians, they have used and milked Youngstown, but they've turned it into trash by their continual abuse of the ignorance of the people that vote for them. And Carol Rigetti is one of them. Mike Ray is another. I'm not going to put Dave Beatrice on that list because I like Dave Beatrice. But there's a whole – Tim Ryan is absolutely one of them. Next episode, let's just make fun of Tim Ryan. And then Bob Hagan, Buckwheat Bob, that racist individual who calls black people buckwheat. That's horrible. Bob Hagan, when has he worked in the private sector and contributed to humanity, right? He's just gone from political job. And I love how the Hagans portray themselves as members of the working class. And then they're spending most of the time in the Lower East Side of New York City – coasting off of Nanette Lepore's wealth, right? Like, it's fucking bullshit, right? You want to have real talk? Yeah, these guys are all phonies and fakes. So anyways, sorry, Michael. Don Hannah owes me reparations.
On that note, we thank everybody for tuning in. If you watched on YouTube, definitely hit that like button, subscribe. And if you're on Facebook, continue to support us. Comment on our posts. I'll start posting a little bit more. I kind of went MIA there for a few months. And I try to stay up on Twitter. And so thank you again, everybody tuning in here to the 37th. We made it 37 episodes. We'll try to get some interviews scheduled here between now and November. And we certainly won't go 3 months between now and the next podcast. We have plenty to discuss, especially as summer winds down and we really ramp up into the election season with some big races statewide and locally. So we will see. We'll get those interviews scheduled. And again, we thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Dane.
Thank you.
Enjoy here the next few weeks of summer before. Well, your little one's probably not going to be in school yet, right?
No.
Okay. I was going to say before school starts. Well, I got 2 weeks before mine. So looking forward to these next 2 weeks before we send them off to kindergarten. I feel officially old now.
You are. You're a boomer.
I am. All right, everybody. Well, take care. Thanks again.
Thank you, Michael.